Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Really should get used to it. You're going to be hearing a lot of her. Yola is one of the artists I'm most excited about, and it's not only am I excited about her being a Bonnaroo, but she's also somebody that allows me to talk about me.
Well, that is the requirement, isn't it?
It is, right.
I'm going to guess that's part of why you like me, because I let you go on and on.
Yeah, you're very docile, and you really let me just keep going and going no matter what.
Yeah, the way I look at it, it's the old give them enough rope, but you know, you go ahead.
I've never been given enough. I'll never find the end of that rope. It's Barry Corder. I'm Brad Steiner. This is the What Podcast, part two of our two-part sit down with the guys that book your Bonnaroo lineup each and every year. Brian and Steve, and then a special guest from AC, Ted Heinig, who set all of this up and gave us the idea for it, which is awesome. Again, like we said last week, we've ran out of ideas.
Well, sort of, yeah. We're still getting there. They keep making the lineup, and there's new people, but yeah, that was terrific of Ted to come up with that, and for those guys, we said it before, for Steve and Brian to give us so much time, as well as all that insight. You know, it's still, I don't know about you, but... you know, we left there pretty excited about what we got, but here it is 2 weeks later, and it's still pretty doggone cool.
Yeah, and if you listen to part one, we appreciate it, and I'm sure that you had a ton of questions that you probably had, so send them to us. We don't mind it. Love to get your input at the what underscore podcast, thewhatpodcast.com. Drop us a line. You know, the list of questions that, you know, I want a round two. Yeah. I want to do this again. And hopefully one of them comes back to Camp Nut Butter and we get him a little boozed up and we can get a little bit more information out of him. Hopefully yeah. the plan.
We'll give away Taco's booze like
sure.
we did last year.
Anything.
It worked. Whatever it takes.
So,
but yeah, I think they will. I'm glad you said that because I think they were, I think they enjoyed it and I think they're willing to do a round two.
I hope so because it's not something that's ever been done, I think. I don't know if anybody's really ever had this conversation with people who, you know, book. I don't know if there are Coachella podcasts,
yeah.
But I sure as hell think that they're probably not getting the Golden Voice guys sitting down explaining the booking process.
I totally agree. For them to give us what they did was amazing, and I think it opens up doors for future, what we're going to do in the future.
Yeah. I hope so. And if you haven't listened, please go back and listen to the first part of it. There's just so much in there. There's news, there's insight, there's, you know, explanations of the rationale behind all of it. There's so much that we're going to talk about once this part is over. We'll go through the whole thing and we'll recap, but let's get right back into it. Now, where I wanted to start was a place where Brian made such a great point and Steve jumped in. I want to go back to that part first and then just to, you know, set the table and then we'll take off in part two. So here you go. Part two. of the What Podcast with the guys that book your Bonnaroo lineup.
Harsh realities, we say no a lot.
Right.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, we have to just have some hard conversations year in, year out. And it all ties in really to what a lot of times to what Ted was saying. It's like, you know, we get a lot of pressure and sometimes it's not the right fit for us. You know, us being Bonnaroo, it's not the right timing for the artist. And a lot of times that's a hard, you know, pill to swallow on the artist side. But but sometimes it's actually, it's interesting. There was an example this year, I'm not going to name names, but it was where we wanted them on the event and they turned it down because they didn't think it was the right look for the artist. We didn't necessarily see eye to eye on where it fit in. And so they were like, well, we're just going to wait. And totally respected that decision, you know. And we'll probably have her on the festival next year, you know.
A lot of the, just to piggyback on what Steve says, a lot of it is situational too, because where we are in the process sometimes dictates these decisions. Yes. Because if we're 80% of the way booked and we have an opportunity to put an artist on, but we don't have the exact right opportunity that they see is a fit for them on the festival, sometimes it just doesn't work. So it, you know, timing, it again, just going back to there are so many factors that play into why a band does or does not end up on the lineup. But just to put a bow on this, I don't know, it is pretty fun though to look back at past lineups and see Avett Brothers played a Cafe Stage. Vampire Weekend played Thursday. Yeah. Kings of Leon played first up.
Yeah, that's why I don't.
You know, Alabama Shakes played a Cafe Stage.
Those bands in that teeny tiny print at the bottom of the poster.
It's amazing.
And sometimes you're like, oh man, do you remember that band? Sometimes you're like, oh shit, do you remember? Like, look at that. Look at what we did.
I mean, I think there's one where like the Black Keys are like the third to last on the lineup. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, I think that's where I was trying to go is like, you got to take so much pride in the fact that these are artists that are major stars now, and you guys got to have them in these tiny spots and watch them grow. There's got to be an enormous amount of pride there. But to your point a couple of minutes ago when you said that you don't, did you say something like you try not to do back-to-back or you try not to do multiple years? You give them a window of 3 to 4 years?
It's not a hard and fast rule. Yeah. There's always fluidity there, right? Depending on an artist's trajectory and where they are in their career, it is very difficult for us to repeat year over year, much less 2 or 3 years, just because of the sheer amount of artists that are out there in any given booking cycle. There are obviously a tremendous amount more artists than there are slots we have at the festival, and therefore, you know, obviously we're trying to present a fresh round of artists each year.
I go back to, and I don't want to go backwards, but the year that Dua Lipa did a Thursday night and then turned around and was damn near top of the lineup the next year. I mean, that what conversation happened?
There's an exception to every rule, you know, but again, as a general rule, I mean, just look back. I mean, you don't see a lot of artists playing back-to-back years, much less, you know, every couple, two, three years.
Yeah, right. Because of you guys and other festivals, my bucket list is very, very short now. There are, you know, a handful of artists that I want to see. But how about with you guys? Dolly, we've talked about, but, you know, maybe that you haven't been able to get that you really want to get.
There's definitely a good handful. Yeah. I'm going to, I mean, you do what you want. I'm going to refrain from naming any names just because I like to keep.
Except for Dolly.
Yeah, I mean, you can name them.
I said Dolly.
Because you never know what we're working on. But, there are definitely some. And there's some that that we tried that unfortunately we won't ever have the opportunity to book now. You know, I'm trying to think. To me the number one was Prince. Yeah. You know, and I think that, you know, that one, you know, again, not for lack of trying. In fact, we came pretty close one time. And
it's
it
pretty
just
close did, mean.
Thought we had it.
Yep.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Didn't work out.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I
just wonder what in my world I understand what pretty close means, but I don't know in your world what pretty close means. is pretty close, and this goes for any artist if they're pretty close. Is it a money thing? Is it a production thing? Is it
paperwork's in hand but just not signed?
No, it's not. It wasn't that close. It was just I thought we were close to a confirmation. How about that? And ultimately, for a number of different reasons, it didn't end up working. But
how many of those heartbreakers you have?
Even happens a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Yeah. A couple, two, three, five, depending on how many we go after a year. Yeah. You know?
Is it because in the success that you have, is it dependent? I mean, the word's not dependent, but how much of it is so because you have great relationships with management or booking agents, or when you have somebody that just needs a little bit more work, are you willing to go fly and talk to this booking agent or management team? How much of that legwork are you still doing at this point that you're probably doing a lot more 5-10 years ago?
We still do it. We definitely still do it. You know, if we have our sights set on a particular act, we will do what we need to do to get it done, you know, and that if that's fly or go see the band and like go meet them backstage or, you know, whatever to tell the story. But yeah, we'll.
You never buy anybody a car? You never bought a car and tried?
No. We're way too trying.
We will. To do we that. Will buy a car.
Jay-Z, if we needed, got a car
yeah.
for you.
Yeah,
I'll do it.
You're definitely not above bribing.
Yeah, absolutely yeah. not. I was just kidding. And like some of it happens because we have partners. You know, like we got a text this week about, you know, a potential like add-on for 2020 with one of our partners out in LA. What do you think about this idea? Like Steve and Brian are in there every single day thinking about this, and I think that's a huge part of why it matters. They've been doing it forever. They've got great institutional memory. They really know music. And that's what makes this whole thing go. But they could book the best lineup in the world, but if, you know, Jeff and the team don't deliver the experience on site, if Jacob and Ben don't hold up their end and do an excellent job marketing it, it's the touch points yeah. across the board with the artist liaisons, with the artist shuttle like transport. It's really everything. It's like, you know, creating a city for the weekend that then some of us, especially these two guys, are living to build for the next year, a year and a half out. And I think that's really what makes it all work, because when you're down there at Camp Nut Butter having a great time, you're having a great time because you don't have to think about all the things that aren't going the way that you would want them to go, because somebody's already thought through that and has made it the yeah. best experience possible for your camp for that year. And then each year we try to make everything better. So I think we can't lose sight of that. Yeah. Like sometimes, you know, I'm not in the heavy booking with Bonnaroo, but I've got a booking background, and we all like to think, oh, it's all booking. And listen, booking drives the show. If you don't have a great lineup, you're done. But everything yeah. else that comes with it is critical to, you know, the Bonnaroo fan experience and how they, you know, pull through the toll booths and how long that takes and yeah. how the search goes and how friendly everybody is and the food and the drinks and the pricing. There has just been a massive amount of thought that goes into all of it. And that's, you know, almost 20 years in. That's really what makes it work.
I've always said that if your favorite act is on the lineup, it's the best festival ever. And if they're not, it's the worst.
Who is your favorite act?
We've heard that before.
You can say who your favorite
you're
act
so millennial,
is.
Barry.
I was going to say.
No, I usually say that to people who are criticizing a festival. But how do you guys define success? I mean, this lineup has been getting mostly praise since it dropped. But how do you guys define whether you put together a good lineup or not?
Are we selling tickets? I mean, I think that's a pretty good – I mean, I don't know. I think that –
because you said earlier you're proud of all of them, and I'm
we are
sure
you're sincere in that, but some sell more tickets than others, and that's what I mean. You look at it and say, wow, that was a good lineup. Why didn't it do, and why is this one and not that one?
I mean, a lot of times though, we can look back and see maybe on some of the ones that didn't do so well where we didn't actually deliver the best lineup that we could have, or we did deliver the best lineup that we could have that year, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't, because I mean so much of it is just, you know, timing and things like that. I don't know. I mean, before, like the day before we released this lineup, you know, Brian and I have been working on this for a, you know, well over a year, and we were talking, we're like, like, what do you think? And we're both just kind of like, I don't know, man.
We'll see.
Because we've been staring at it and looking at it and like internalizing it for so long that we're like, I guess we'll find out tomorrow. I mean, we think it's good, but
you don't take it, or like, how many people do you actually share it with to let the, like, get like an outsider view and say, what do you think about this? You do that at all?
You don't have teenagers in the house. You know,
that's I mean, we run ideas. No. I mean, we run ideas by like lots of people on the team and the Bonnaroo team, the, you know, staff here. I mean, the full lineup.
We collaborate with the team. It's not just, you know, two bros in an office putting this thing together. We ultimately are making the decisions on what
love
is,
to see that lineup.
Yeah. we're making the ultimate decision on what is chosen or not, but there's definitely a lot of team input.
Do you guys feel as though, as individuals though, do you feel like you have certain strengths in certain genres more so than you do somewhere else? Like, for instance, you might be more of a hip hop guy and you just know it.
I think we obviously have our personal likes musically, but it's our job to know all of it. Right. And so we are listening to music all day, every day. We are reading, studying, looking, you know, talking to agents, managers, you know, industry folks. I mean, this is literally, we live this. And you know, Steve might be better at, you know, some of the more indie stuff, where as I might be a little bit better at some of the rock pop stuff, but we all know it, you know, and it's not like I'm like having to convince him or turn him on to an artist, because for the most part, he already knows it
and vice versa.
So it really, if we didn't do that, then it would be hard, because, you know, we would constantly be having to say, like, if I'm not listening to any, you know, hip hop and Steve is, and he's like, well, why don't you know this? And I'm like, well, I don't want to book it because I don't never heard of it. We rarely have to have that conversation.
Have there been total disagreements?
Absolutely.
Do we want to go over one?
We don't want to go over them. But yeah, we're not disagree a lot. Names. Yeah.
Going back to,
I mean, sometimes we do, you know, have to sell each other a little harder on something than, you know,
it's not because we don't know the band, it's because we don't want to, but, you know.
Yeah, exactly, because we see something that, you know, we feel very invested in, and we want to, you know. But, I mean, that goes to something interesting, because, like, it's great because it is very collaborative. Like, it's not just like, man, like, if one person was, like, booking Bonnaroo or whatever, it's really, it makes it really fun and dynamic, and, like, I think you can see a lot of the results by looking at the lineup and looking at, like, when the schedules come out and how you experience it on site, that, like it's not just one person sitting there and putting this thing together. It's, like, ideas and constant conversation and, like, riffing off of someone else's ideas, you know, doing it in that way, I think really, 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 like, you know, is hopefully clear in, you know, once you're on the festival site and experiencing like from the first up to the last off, you know, that kind of thing.
I was just going to say, like, I think everyone here on the work of Steve and Brian that they're doing, which is so great, is super proud when the lineup comes out, and it's really important to all of us. But there are a couple of factors, because the validation comes from, you know, the people that we're all serving, which is the Bonnaroo ticket buyer. Like, if they're not buying tickets, this thing is over.
Yeah.
So everything that happens is with them in mind to create an experience that they really delight in and love. However, we have no control over the economy. So, like, in the years where, you know, people don't have as much discretionary income, we're going to see a dip in ticket sales because those fans don't have as much money. And then the other thing, and this is what Ashley always says, Ashley Capps, who the president of the business, he always says, we're like miners who are out there, you know, trying to get scarce minerals and resources. Brian and Steve can only mine the artists that are out there on this cycle. And if a couple of them that were really key parts of the overall headline experience don't want to do Bonnaroo or are going to skip it this time around, they're really limited. There are only a handful of artists that can play the elevated headline spots. And I think that's another factor that really ties into the, not the proud part, but the ticket sales part. Because if you can't get whoever, just because they're not touring, it's not possible, that may be a factor in your overall sales at the end of the
That's
year.
That's a great analogy. You're not creating the gold, you're mining the gold.
We're right. just mining it.
Yeah, we're miners. Yeah.
The reason why I asked that originally, what's your lineup look like? What's your lane? What are you? What is your path going to be on Friday? Because look, Friday to me, and look, yeah, I've tried to keep away from some of the platitudes because I've said them on this show plenty of times. But I mean, you guys are creating such a feeling and such an experience. And I've said this to Ashley. I thought, you know, Bonnaroo and Ashley pretty much saved music about 15, 16 years ago. Your lineup, your path, what does it involve on a Friday? I have 16 artists I want to see on Friday. It's the damn near the best lineup day I have ever seen in a festival.
Thank you.
And I feel like I've been to damn near all of them in the country. Friday is unbelievable.
It's pretty stacked.
Yeah,
it is pretty stacked. I don't know how we ended up with that. No, it worked out really well. That's probably a better question for my wife.
Okay.
Who I usually, you know, let
you might be a
plot my path.
I think I felt like sorry to cut you off there, but it just reminded me when I started, you know, like sort of bouncing off what we were working on for this year with my wife, and she, as excited as she got, I was like, okay, maybe we are actually onto something. Oh,
yeah.
You know,
I think it's the question
like her lane is definitely like. That level of excitement coming from the wives was really, like, felt pretty good.
Have you ever overbooked an artist wait, look at this. Overbook is the wrong word. Have you ever booked an artist that you saw was petrified and killed it, or the opposite? You saw somebody that saw a moment happening in their career. They could see it coming, and they were petrified. You didn't expect them to do as well as they did, and they absolutely blew it away. You ever have any one of those?
I can't think of anything in particular.
Yeah.
You ever find an artist that just feels like the moment is just too big for them?
What do you think, Dan?
Never.
Yeah.
You don't think so?
But I wouldn't say it if it... Like,
no,
right.
Sam,
yeah.
Like, I wonder, I don't know. For you guys as music professionals, if you look at an artist, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, but it's really hard to also say, because if you're not a fan of that artist, like, sometimes you just don't know. And sometimes people are really feeling it who are into it in the pit, and you've just gotten there for the last 10 minutes and you missed it.
It's hard to answer that.
The only thing
I could say is I think we're really good at programming and slotting and positioning, but we don't hit 100% of the time. And I think that there's definitely been some moments over the years where we looked back and thought maybe we would have done, like, I would have not put that band on that stage in that time. Is that makes
the
sense?
The genesis of that question is Warren Treaty, wherein I don't know if they knew the moment that they were about to have, and they seemed like, oh God, this is the scariest moment of my life. And then they go out there and I feel like they changed their life. I mean, it changed one of my favorite shows I've ever been to at Bonnaroo. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm bawling at the end of it. They're bawling after it. Afterwards, they're just hugging everybody as if, you know, they had just had this amazing experience that they feel as though may have just changed.
Well, I think that's a better way to approach the question versus people sort of like not like succeeding in the slot that they were given or, you know, being underwhelming or something. It's more about those times where it's an act that like has gone above and beyond, and like the experience and like the changing, like that moment, like you said with Warren Treaty, like that was like a moment that was changing for the band and you, et cetera, et cetera. And I can think of like Japandroids on a Thursday night years ago. Like that band still is like, they hate festivals. The only festival they want to play is Bonnaroo, because they still to this day tell me that was their number one, maybe their favorite show of all time.
That's awesome.
You know, and I was there and I watched it and like it was insane. And we put that band on a Thursday night and like who the F knew who they were.
And I can't tell you how many comments from artists we get that Bonnaroo is their favorite show of all time, you know. And you know, another one that comes to mind that I'll share, that, you know, this one I'm really proud of because she's had a long and storied and amazing career, is Sheryl Crow.
Yeah.
You know, and Sheryl Crow, we still get, you know, comments from that camp that was her favorite show she's ever played. And that's, you know, I don't know how many shows Sheryl Crow's played. Yeah. That makes us proud. But again, it all goes back to the fans, because we have the best audience in the world. And if they're not showing up and being enthusiastic for every single show that we're putting out there, then artists aren't responding in that way. And that's what makes it.
John Prine last year, I mean, he danced off the stage. Paul Janeway talked about that there was a goal of his to play, and then we watched him come out early and stood at the front of the stage and just smiled.
It was a great conversation. We've got a little bit more left for you, and then we'll wrap up the whole thing here in a second. But first, we wanted to jump in and say thank you to some Patreons, because our Patreon thing, you know, we walked into it really nervous. And it turned out okay.
One, two, maybe a family member.
No kidding. We didn't offer a family membership, by the way.
Yeah, we should have. And, you know, I don't know if it's worth pointing out, but I think it's unbelievable. We sold out the upper tiers
first. Right, the $20 a month thing. I had no idea.
You guys are awesome for doing that. It's amazing.
Let's go through a couple of David Grimes, Leslie Kent, Condor, Frank Swanson, Phil Hanley, Dustin Garrick, Chloe Howe. We'll have some more to announce a little bit later on in the show. The thing that is amazing about the Patreons is the conversations that they are having offline. And they, like, we're having a conversation with just the Patreon. So our buddy Lord Taco, our Lord and Savior Lord Taco, created us a chat group inside the Patreon. So not only do you get the rewards that are on each tier that are available, like a mixtape from one of us and a T-shirt and all that kind of stuff, but you also get in on our like little secret conversation. Maybe we drop a little hints of knowledge through it in the next few months.
I think you and I are both continually surprised, amazed, whatever the word is, that the level of, what do you want to call it, interest, love, year-round, that all of us have. You know, it's not just you and me, obviously.
Now, and it is true. I was having this conversation the other day with someone. I just, come September, maybe August, there isn't that much to talk about when it comes to Bonnaroo, so we do like to take a few months off, but it does feel like, you know, 7 to 8 months out of my year, this is a driving conversation.
Somebody on Reddit, I think, yesterday pointed out 21 more Fridays.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it like that. I just can't talk about it like that. It's very weird.
For you and me, it's 21 more Wednesdays. Yeah.
I know. It's a lot of work.
It's a long week, but it's great.
So hopefully this will start our mostly every week show up until the festival. We'll take some weeks off here and there just to give you a heads up. But from here on out, you can probably expect a new show every week. Let's get back into it. Part two continues now, the What Podcast, with the guys that book your Bonnaroo lineup, Brian, Steve, and Ted from AC Entertainment.
Speedy, speedy, slow down time, gas station is running dry, Sweaty, sweaty, wonder why, now it's always summertime, It's all gone by.
I've always wondered, because one of the things that Bonnaroo is known for, the thing that is so of their brand, is a super jam. How do you book that? How in the world does that happen? Do you have to find the right person who's willing to just take it and run with it? Or do you have to specifically go and find the artist and add it to a contract?
No, it's not the latter. It's more about finding an act that's going to embrace what we're trying to achieve, and that can, you know, wants to really put in the time to put together a special moment, and wants to present that at Bonnaroo. And, you know, a lot of it is relationship based, and, you know, what for us, it's, you know, Sylvanesso is an artist that, we've wanted to do something special with for years out there. And, you know, when I remember the moment I had a conversation with their manager about the fact that they were even considering the toying with the idea of doing interpretations of their music with a full live band, mm-hmm. my brain immediately went to,
really?
Mm-hmm. Wonder if we could do something special. So even then, I kind of had, immediately I thought Super Jam. And so
I think a Sylvanesso Super Jam might be one of the most unique things that you guys have come up with. And now that I know it's with a full band, now it starts to make sense. And I heard of that the other day. Mm-hmm. But that is such a weird pull. Mm-hmm. But I love weird.
And so they did a short run of this in November of 2019, this past year, and we presented the show at the Ryman, and I remember seeing the show in that moment, and I knew we had a home run, because it was one of the most, you know, impressive and dynamic and beautiful and incredible shows I saw last year. Mm-hmm. And I just think I cannot wait for that to play at Bonnaroo and to have it be a super jam, which means there's going to be some fun things up our sleeves. It's going to be an amazing moment.
But they got
to
come up with the friends and family, right?
Well,
do they call in favors?
We do it together. Okay. You know, it's a collaborative effort. You know, similarly, the Grand Ole Opry, you know, we work very much hand in hand with the Opry team on crafting a Bonnaroo moment for the Grand Ole Opry. It's the same thing with the Super Jam. It's very much in collaboration with the festival and with us. And, you know, obviously the artists really drive it, but we're bringing a lot of ideas to the table and really, really working with them. We're using our relationships, the band's relationships, to try to come up with some pretty amazing special moments and special guests.
Have there been occasions where maybe guys have played and then seen a super jam and said, I want to do that?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and that's really, you know, whether organically is a word or not, a lot of times the super jams almost come together in that way, because we have artists that we book and they're playing the festival and we don't think of them in that way, but then they'll reach out and say, hey, have you thought about so and so? They might want to do the super jam. And we think, oh, that's really interesting. And so we go, yeah, or
everyone talks,
yeah,
about it.
And so
yeah,
you never know who's going to be interested. Yeah. And sometimes it's us reaching out and saying, hey, Billy Idol, will you come do this? Or hey, Brittany Howard, will you come do this? Or sometimes it's them going with, hey, I'd like to participate
exactly.
in this.
Anybody on the spot ever decide to do it just on the fly?
Great question. I'm sure that's happened.
Yes.
Okay. Those shows are very planned. You know, I mean, they're not, it's not like in the moment, hey, let's do this cover song right now. I mean, they're rehearsed, they're thought through. They're obviously very improvisational in nature. But there's a lot of planning that goes involved. There's rehearsals that go involved that are involved as well.
Who on this lineup specifically best? We've talked about Lizzo earlier. Who on this lineup best represents your brand?
Wow,
there's a lot of them. I mean,
I don't know. It's hard to say any one band.
Yeah, I mean,
necessarily.
I kind of think that really at the end of the day, like everybody that's on the lineup represents
the
festival and what we're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is Tame Impala more on brand for Bonnaroo than Tool? I mean, they're both representative,
I mean, it's not,
right? Because that's a tribute to the brand itself,
yep,
right?
Is exactly.
that
it's
that's what I think is so strong about this lineup, is that it's just strong from top to bottom. What did we call it? Heavy? It's just heavy. It's heavy with good stuff.
It's insanely well-rounded, and you guys should be celebrated for it. It makes our life a lot easier because we have a lot to talk about. But you mean you guys should really, and what back to the point that you guys made earlier, the way that you can look back on a lineup is unbelievable. The way that you can like backwards convince yourself like that lineup was great, but in the front of it you're like want. Again, it's never, we say this on the show all the time, it is never about a lineup. And I know Ted is right, and I know most people, I get it when they say that, you know, lineup creates dollars, but the beauty about Bonnaroo is it's almost insulated from the ebbs and flows of an industry, the ebbs and flows of a cycle or a financial crisis or whatever, because you've got an experience that is unlike anything else on the planet, and you've got a brand that is as strong as you can find that's connected to its audience. And, you know, you guys are... At least we like to showcase that on this show. And, you know, we appreciate, you know, you guys giving us this time, because this is not something that's happened, I think, ever. So this is a pretty big deal.
Can't thank you guys enough.
Well, it's been a lot of fun talking to you, sure. And we enjoy it.
We are such nerds about this. We could literally talk about this all day. All day.
Well, we could meet up at Camp Nut
Camp,
Butter.
Camp Nut Butter.
Nut Butter.
Yeah. We'll have a Camp Nut Butter meetup.
I've never been.
Meet the bookers.
You know, Ken Weinstein was a guest last year. On
we couldn't get him to leave. Yeah. We could not get him out of camp.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, and that was terrific.
Yeah, Ken's the best.
Ken Weinstein owning camp is really one of the highlights of my weekend. I mean, just shooting off one-liners at everybody. Yeah. You know, it's a really invigorating
experience. It was like a radio show.
Well, that's what I do for a living. A comedy show.
That's great.
Thank you, guys.
Guys,
so
amazing.
Our pleasure. Anytime.
Really phenomenal.
Yep. Thanks for coming up to Knoxville.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't wait till June.
Well, where to start? There's so many places. First off, thank you so much for joining us and going through that amazing masterclass as to how a lineup is booked, how a festival is built. Not just a lineup, but how a festival is built with Ted, Brian, and Steve from AC Entertainment. They could not have been more generous and gracious with their time and their information. First off, let's thank the rest of our Patreons that signed up in the last few weeks. Dan Sweeney, Lucy Young, Linda Doles, Chelsea Davis, Jason Hazelbaker, and Ella Watson. Thank you guys so much. Let's get into it. Let's recap what we've heard over the last 2 weeks. If you haven't listened to part one, I don't know how in the world you missed that. So go back and listen to that and come back to the recap. But this is, I guess we can start with the news. The news that they gave us, and the more I listen, when I listen back to it, I realize they give us a lot more news than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, King Gizzard, mm-hmm. Going to be playing late night. There's still some conversations back and forth as to what stage that they're going to be on. I don't know. They didn't give us any sort of hint, and I didn't want to push because they had already dropped that piece of knowledge that they probably let slip. The second piece of news: they have tried on Dolly. They've tried Dolly a lot, and they do it every year. It seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, that shouldn't surprise anybody. I'm betting you could probably make a list of all the acts that we want to see, and they probably tried.
Yeah.
Stones, They got the U2. They got McCartney. I was interested to hear, and I'm betting it was McCartney that took him 5 years. Mm-hmm. I bet he was one of those that took that many years to get, to negotiate. I found it fascinating how much that type of thing, that networking, that friend making, that whatever you want to call it, it's not just sit in a conference room and come up with a list and call an agent type of thing. It's get on a plane, get on a car, go see the show.
You get on a car.
Get in a car. Sorry.
I know. It's funny that you say that, because you and I have both been in a room booking a festival.
Right.
And that's exactly what certain festivals do. We have been part of a booking process years and years ago for a festival, and it literally is show up to a conference room, give us some names, we'll make some calls. They don't go out and do the legwork that it takes, the relationship building that requires years and decades almost to try and build. And then on top of it, a lot of festivals, the reason why they die and go to that festival graveyard is because maybe they don't have the infrastructure built to have those relationships that can get you through ebbs and flows of the music cycle.
Well, I would add to that a little. I don't think that's 100% right. I think the festival that you're talking about...
I don't really shoot for that. I shoot for about 75. I'm a solid C
student.
I think
the festival that you talk about is a lot of relationships, but it gets more to the question you asked them was, are there package deals? If I take A, do I get B and C? Or you have to take B and C. Or if I get A this year...
That really surprised me.
I think that happens in the festival you're talking about that you and I have both been involved in, and that surprised me that they don't do that kind of thing like you ask.
And here's the thing. Is like, normally, if somebody were to tell me that, I would just not believe them.
Yeah.
But I have no reason to not
No.
Trust everything that they're saying.
Exactly.
They were so forthright and accommodating and open, and I mean, they basically let us walk in there and play on their computers, essentially. Yeah. You know, this is
pretty
like,
much. We took over that room, the TV, the computer.
Walked in Ashley's office, milled around, moved around some stuff, cleaned his windows.
Yeah.
It's very...
I mean, the only thing they weren't going to give, you know, were things that hurt them professionally. You know, they weren't going to say anything bad about anybody. They
I really tried. I tried.
I know. I'm with you. There's no reason for them to have misled us.
It's just
about
strange,
any of that.
Though, when we think about, especially the Cafe X, the lower card, the undercard stuff, how they wouldn't come along with some sort of management. You know, I'll just use this for an example. If I have mom and pop records, and I've got a up and coming artist that I really, really want to get an exposure, and I think this is their moment, I say, hey, can you put blank on because I'm giving you one of my better artists of mom and pop records. I can't, in my logical brain cannot think that that's possible. But, you know, if you really believe in your brand, and if you really, really think that you are the pinnacle and as good as you think that you are, you can say no to that. That's brave. That's really, really brave.
I re-listened to that interview, and that whole part of the conversation is what stood out to me. And you have more of an insight into it because of your line of work. As a newspaper guy, I'm getting whatever's coming to town or whatever's hot at the moment. And that idea of being able to look ahead 6 months, 12 months, 18 months and say, we're going to have a new album out then, we're going to be touring, or we're not, you know, this is a June 2020 is a good time for us or a bad time for us. That's next level kind of stuff.
I know
that
this
didn't think about.
I know this is a sidebar. And it may be a conversation for another day. One day when we don't have much to talk about, we start talking about the industry. You know, being, like you said, being the line of this that I am in, it really worries me that they can predict it that far out. Not the bookers, but the industry in general. Because it almost feels like it's being set up and it's already predetermined. And, you know, you go back to this Grammy thing that happened over the past week and a half and how she accused the Grammys of you know, rigging the whole process. You know, when you really, really want to think the worst of all of this, you wonder how much of this is predestined, right?
Yeah.
Already
sure.
made up to be successful, no sure. matter if it's good or not. That's an industry conversation, and that's something that sort of, even in my industry, freaks me out a bit. It's that you can predict it so well. It may be the reason why you can predict it so well is that they already know. That scares me a bit.
I mean, you and I have had many, many conversations indirectly about this, and yeah, I mean, you said last week, talking about Lizzo, that they told you she would be doing arenas. Now, some of that, I'm sure, is just looking at data, but some of that is, you tell me, they know how much money they're going to put into an artist. They know
at this point,
or not.
That's a good point. So they wouldn't put as much money into insert artists here unless they knew specifically the ROI was going to make sense in the long run. And the way that they can manipulate what is successful and what isn't, I think is the point that I'm making that scares me the most. And when I say they, I mean they generally in the industry, like the overlords where you think that maybe only two or three people run the entire music industry. That's where it gets really, really scary.
Yeah. One of the things I've noticed, I mean, I've been doing this 31 years. I used to get box loads of albums and CDs hoping that we would review them. In the last several years, it's trickled down to just a handful, and it finally dawned on me the ones that I was getting were the acts that are big or going to be big. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They quit sending me the hope fours. Mm-hmm. They were just sending the ones that did blow up and became big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah, it almost feels as though as a buyer of the product, it almost feels as though I have no control here.
Yeah.
It almost feels Matrix-like, you know? Yeah. And I know this feels like a very weird conversation to go into, but it does freak me out a little bit.
Well, except I can bring it back to to Bonnaroo and the cafe stages, that's what I think they've always done very, very well in the entire time I've been going, is I always felt like it didn't matter that anybody on that lineup was going to have a hit record or not. They were just going to be good. You know what I mean?
That's good. Yeah, that's right. And they actually said that in the chat.
Yeah.
They didn't, you know, they know what they're putting on a stage is quality.
Yeah.
And they know they're going to have an audience there. It's now on the artist to make something of that moment.
Yeah, I mean, and I started to say during that interview, and I didn't, but they have earned a huge level of trust.
Yeah, well, see, this is where I just don't believe them. I will straight up say I don't believe them. Look, they can
nobody's
be
that good.
They can be as humble as they want to. They have broken artists. Now, I know it takes a lot of people and a lot of effort and a lot of like foresight to know exactly when your moment should be on the artist's part. Bringing it on stage, I get all of that, but they have got to look in the private moments at each other and be like, you know what, if it wasn't for us, I don't think they'd be where they are. Come on.
Oh, yeah, it works both ways. You know, that's a huge get to be able to played Bonnaroo on your resume. No question. That at least gets you a return phone call, right?
Right.
I would think. Now, what you do with it is on you. Yeah. But, I mean,
well, that's
there have
sort
been
of
acts that you and I walked up to and been like, uh-uh. And, it, you know, maybe it's just not for
me.
Well,
that's sort of what Ted said when we asked the question, who has not delivered? Have there been artists that are just, they don't bring something that fits the moment? Mm-hmm. Where this is, like, if they say this is the moment that you get to make your next step. This is going to be your opening to a huge audience. Who didn't bring it? And what do you feel when you see them not bringing it? You know, the answer Ted gave was everyone. Yeah. Everyone brings it.
That was politically correct.
Which is, you know, I guess. But I think his overall point was the better one when he said it's not just about, like, them bringing it. I know it's on the artist to seize the moment. They didn't look. There are plenty of artists that we watched and said that's just not. But that was Ted's overall point. I think sometimes they have seized the moment. It's just not for you.
Yeah, no question.
That there's somebody in the pit that is going crazy about this. The fans that have shown up for that band love it, and it's just not ours. It's not our recipe.
That was his point, was that maybe you just did walk up and you missed the whole lead up to that, yeah. And maybe you know you've been there all day, so your headspace is different than somebody else. Yeah. Sure, no question about that.
Let's go through some of the other news that they broke. So they've tried a lot with Dolly, and they're going to try again next year. They've got King Gizzard Late Night. The other one that I thought was interesting, and we talked about a little bit, is that they listen. They listen to the surveys. They listen to the Reddits. They listen to, you know, the reactions of the audience and the crowd, and their people mean a lot to them, and yeah. They do not want to disappoint them. The other thing that I thought was the big one, really the big one, was that they had Prince.
Yeah, they thought they had Prince.
They thought they had Prince.
Yeah.
The crown jewel. Now, I know everybody's crown jewel now is Daft Punk. At this point, it's just a joke. But the fact that, you know, Prince was this close. Now, I pressed and I asked, you know, what does this close mean? Because I honestly don't know. I mean, I don't know what this close right. means. I mean, you could say that you're this close to booking Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yeah. We almost had.
We just missed him.
Yeah.
But but looking in his eyes, I could tell how close they were.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that, you know, made it to the air, and I don't know if you felt the weight of him, but I looked in his eyes,
yeah.
And I asked him, what does this close mean to you?
Right.
And he made me feel as though it was there.
It was there. I asked if it was, you know, just not a signature or paperwork, and it didn't get to that level, but I think at some degree at that level, a handshake, you know, yeah, I'm coming. If Prince wants to come, same with Dolly. We've laughed about that many, many times. It's all up to Dolly. If she wants to come, she'll come. If she doesn't want to come, it's not because they're not willing to, you know, give her whatever she's asking
Mark
for.
This down for if one of them comes back to camp, I want to know if... I know they're not going to answer. I want to know how much that offer was. Maybe even if it's off the record. I've got... If it's double digits, man, would they ever offer double digits to somebody?
You know...
That's a lot of
money. What I would want to know is how often the number is the deciding factor.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Because I'm going to guess for a lot of those bands, if they want to play, it's not about the money.
Well, see, that's what they said. They want somebody to want to be there.
Yeah.
Which is an easy way out of the money conversation because, you know, if you love me, if we're in a relationship, if you love me, you'll want to be with me. I shouldn't have to force you to want to be with me. Just like... We can get out of the money conversation pretty easily if you don't want to come here.
Yeah, I call it stupid money. You know, there are many, many stories over the years I've heard of. I'll give you for an example. There's a local high school here that has more money than they should, and they book acts to come and play, and they wanted to have James Brown. Well, he doesn't want to come play a high school, as you can imagine.
Excuse me?
This was years ago.
What kind of story is this?
Well, no, what really? I'm saying is, so he asked for stupid money. And they gave it to him.
Stop it.
Yeah. So that's what I mean.
Write down what high school that is. This is the strangest thing I've ever heard. Okay, I got it. Yeah. That is insane.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. They're stupid money.
What would they do with James Brown?
They had a senior party.
Oh, get out of here.
No, they do it all the time. They've
that makes
done
me
it for
want
years.
To punch people. You do not get James Brown for your senior party. Senior party.
They had P-Funk. Okay. 1 year. Same thing.
Absurd.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You know, James's people, no, I'm not going to do that. And then he says, well, I'll do it for this. And they get it. Stupid money.
Do you remember what the number was?
No.
Okay.
No, but
you ask for something completely out of the left field, thinking that there's no way that somebody you're wanting them to say no.
Correct.
It is a no.
But if you're stupid enough to pay it, right. I'm going to come play. And
Bonner would
I don't
never
know
do
how
that.
Much. That's what I mean. I don't think, you know, Dolly, for example, could ask for any number, right? But she doesn't need the money. It's not about the money. Either she wants to play or she doesn't want to play. Now her management probably says, "We're not going below this number." Mm-hmm. But it happens. You know what I mean? If they want to play, they'll work with you and give up.
And here's the thing. I think the dirty little secret about all of this is I think that they're working with a lot less of a budget than you think they are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. I think there are probably acts that get... I mean, McCartney. I don't remember what I heard the rumor was. What, 2.5, 3 million?
I thought it was five.
Five million? Yeah. I don't remember. It's a bunch. And that, to be honest, surprised me because he doesn't need the money. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy's okay. He's mm-hmm. going to make it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it becomes an ego thing, you know, if they say, well, what's the highest you paid someone else? Well, I have to have, you know, $1 more than that. I don't know. But I don't think the money in that AA plus list, I think they will. They work. Mm. You know what I mean?
The other things that I thought were interesting and I think are breaking news, that it's really two guys. And I know they talk about the team and, you know, the C3 guy that helps with the EDM stage and, you know, the plazas and those get booked, you know, separately. I get it. But that's stunning. When it's all said and done, it's really two guys' relationships with artist management, et cetera, that really drive this whole thing.
And it's worth pointing out, they've had two good years, right?
Well, here's the part they won't tell you. And everybody that's listening here knows the elephant in the room. They know that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, wasn't doing so well.
Yep.
And we know why, because it sort of got taken over by other entities. And then when AC decided to... Well, I don't know if they decided or not. That's the wrong way of saying it. But once it got put back in the AC's hands, you know, things started to turn around. And now it seems as though the powers that be see how well this works and they're not going to screw with it.
Well, you and I talked about, I guess, last week, the fact that they've done it for, what'd they say, 12 years. they've learned a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. Imagine bringing somebody brand new and dropping them in a room and saying, book this festival.
Yeah.
Which probably gets to the 3 years and 4 years ago with the old committee of mm-hmm. many is a committee mm-hmm. of none type of thing. Too many chiefs. Everybody probably had a, who knows? We weren't in that room. But yes, I was stunned that it's two people, but it seems to be the right two people.
The right two people. And now, yeah. The more, like, another thing I wanted to ask when I listened back, how often do you fight? Like, how often, I understand that you disagree about artists, but if you don't come in with the right mentality with another human being who is basically your professional crutch,
yeah,
I mean, you count on that person to come at you with the same energy, to not fight with you, to respect you. How often do those lines get blurred? How often do you get just totally butthurt by somebody else and you just have to stop talking for a little while?
Yeah, because I mean, they said they fight about it.
If you're talking about this every day, like if I'm to believe you and you're talking about this every day and you're working on this nonstop and you've got however many venues to book and you've got how many other festivals to book, how often are you guys just like, I got to take a break from you?
Yeah, we didn't get to how often, but they did say they argue. That's an interesting question because they do it year round, right? They're already working on next year. That is an interesting question.
And they're working on festivals, they're working on venues. And here's the other thing that I thought about along the same lines. If you listen, and I thought it was so interesting when I asked, not the question that I asked, but I asked them, what are you better at than...
Yeah, the other. What's your strength?
What's your strength? What's your genre that you really, really feel comfortable in? And, you know, Brian's answer was, we need to know all of it. Yeah. It is our job to know all of it. And, boy, that hit me like a ton of bricks. It's a job.
Yes.
How often do they say to themselves, I'm just tired of absorbing content. I'm tired of listening to music. Again, how often does the job that you have turn you into being soured on the product in which you're representing?
Well, again, I mean, you and I are peripherally in this business. I mean, that's similar to what I do as a newspaper guy. I'm not supposed to have a preference. You know, if we've got an act that's coming in that's whatever genre, I have to show the same enthusiasm and energy and interest in writing a story about it. So I kind of get that part of it.
I get it, but like I am in radio. But, dude, when I am out of work, the last thing I want to do is listen to radio. And what sucks is the reason I'm in radio is because I loved radio and I loved listening to it and I love being a radio nerd. Now I can't stand it because it's my daily, my day to day.
And that I was going to agree with. And then the second is how many phone calls and emails and people like me coming up to them at Moon River and saying, I know who you should get. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the nice one. How about the label guy or the manager, you know, here, listen to this CD. You need to get these people. That would get old, I would think.
Or how about, again, no kidding. How about this? What about if you love a band and you realize who their manager is and then you're like, I hate that guy. I hate that guy and I know how bad this is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to know the bad days. Right?
Yeah, well,
I want to know when they argue. I want to know when they get tired of the job. I want to know when they get, like, they're burnt out and what do they do to get out of that mindset? Because, you know, we think of this, we are so hypercritical about every line on a festival poster. We're so hypercritical of everything that happens on the farm because it may inconvenience us for a second or two, or we don't agree with one thing or the other. But my God, there are human beings that have to do this for a living.
I know.
And they are burnt out. They're tired. Some days they're just not in it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I'm always laugh about my job. You know, it beats digging a ditch.
I don't work on a roof for a living.
But I'll give you this. When I tell people I go to Bonnaroo every year, first of all, they can't believe that I camp. That's question number one. You know, you camp in a tent.
Uh-huh.
And then they don't believe that it's work. You know what I mean? It's work for me. I love it. I'm having a good time. I'd rather be doing that than digging a ditch.
It's true.
But, you know, it's work.
My friends, and Taco is one of them, but when all my friends literally look at me as if I do not do anything during the day. Yeah, I think it's by that. Well, I mean, it makes it. I make it look easy, but at some point, you do some things for so long, right. You make it sure. look pretty easy. And you know that's yeah. that's just the nature.
And
of it.
And I've done it enough times. You know, I have a routine. I mean, my routine up there is pretty set. But since we've added Wednesday, going up on Wednesday for media day and Monday, it's a long haul.
Oh, do not even pretend that us being there from Wednesday to Monday is any sort of work. Now, I will even admit that. There's
no,
that's
it's
not,
work.
Well, I'm
it's
not
working.
Working.
You're not working.
No, I'm not doing a damn thing.
I know 2 years when I came.
We've had interviews with people at camp that I've slept through.
Yes,
we haven't
true.
Put them on the show.
That's true. That is true.
I'm not working.
So, yeah, to your point, I mean, that's what these guys do year-round. So, yeah, I imagine it does get a little where they just kind of got to say, I need a break.
Yeah.
I got to walk away.
I'm trying to think of anything else. I'm sure there's a ton here to go through, but I think it's probably a good place to stop. I will say one more thing that I find to be really, really hysterical about everybody that works at AC and everybody that's inside the Bonnaroo world, you know, at the top. Right, even Ken does this, Quayar does this, all the AC entertainment people do this. Have you noticed how they say Bonnaroo?
Yes, and
it makes me wonder that we're doing it all wrong.
We are saying it wrong. They all say it a certain way, and I actually had somebody not related tell me there is a proper way to say it.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing that makes me... So if you notice, go back and listen. Everybody that we've ever talked to at AC always calls it Bonnaroo.
Bonnaroo. Yeah, that's
Bonnaroo.
It.
Bonnaroo. We all say Bonnaroo.
That's right. You got
Bonnaroo.
It. I didn't notice that.
But here's the thing that gets me. If it really is the way, because all of them say it that way.
Correct.
It's like they've been told, no, we are going to say it the proper way. And if nobody else does, that's on them.
That's their inside thing.
Right.
Yeah.
No, they have never once corrected anyone. They've
true.
Never once said to anyone, hey, by the way, you actually pronounce it Bonnaroo.
It's true. Ashley says it that way. And he did tell me in his office just before you came in that this is his favorite festival. This is their favorite festival.
So. Yeah, I mean, I bet.
Well, you know, I told him. I said I always heard Big Ears was because that's kind of his baby.
Yeah,
that's his genre. But that was, you know, we asked Brian and them if booking Bonnaroo was different than any others, and they said of course. Mm-hmm. So. You know,
booking Bonnaroo.
Bonnaroo. I got to learn how to say it.
Yeah,
guess.
I do. I like it. It's so Bonnaroo. Fascinating that they've never once corrected anyone, but yet they all say it a specific way.
Yeah, that's true.
All right,
it's funny you caught that because I did too.
There you go. All right, that's Barry Quarter. I'm Brad Steiner. Next week, we're really, really excited about some things that are happening next week. That's going to sort of like be a nice touchstone. From the lineup conversation that we've been having for the last 3 weeks, we'll announce that via Twitter and Facebook and all of the social medias and even our Patreon chat group. They'll know first. All right, we'll talk to you then. Love you.
Hey, 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 hey! How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay!
With Brad Steiner and Barry Quarter.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big.